This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, the Wisconsin Writers Association, and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute, and always streaming at rightscast.net. Write your manuscript, revise your manuscript, query your manuscript, find an agent, maybe, possibly. If yes, then more revision, then submission, then publication, maybe, possibly. Or if no agent, maybe self-pub. Contract an editor, contract a cover designer, format your book, ready it for publication, upload it to sales portals, then promote, release day, and then... The business of being an author is a lot of work, and everything I just mentioned doesn't even include trying to develop a platform or any of the other dozens of things we as writers are supposed to be doing. Today's guest, however, will help us center ourselves as creatives by exploring, yes, the business of being an author, but perhaps more importantly, the business of simply being. Hey there. I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 77 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, the Wisconsin Writers Association, and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. This episode's guest is Lori Buchanan. A cross between Dr. Doolittle, Nanny McPhee, and a type A Buddhist, Lori is an active listener, observer of details, payer of attention, reader and writer of books, kindness enthusiast, and unabashed optimist. She's a former holistic health practitioner and transformational life coach. Her doctorate is in holistic health with an emphasis in energy medicine. Her first two books were published by She Writes Press, and today we'll be talking The Business of Being, Soul Purpose in and Out of the Workplace, a book that helps creatives explore personal transformation at the intersection of business and spirituality. I had the good fortune of reading The Business of Being to kick off 2020, and I knew I had to have Lori on the show immediately after having read it. So without further ado, let's talk The Business of Being an Author with Lori Buchanan. Stay tuned after the show for updates on what you can expect next from the RightsCast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Well, thank you so much, Lori Buchanan, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is a conversation I've really been looking forward to now for about a month since I first finished reading The Business of Being, which is, of course, what we will be talking about today through the eyes of The Business of Being an Author. So why don't we start with definitions then? What is it that we're going to be talking about when we say The Business of Being?
Okay, in your mind's eye, I'd like you to picture a book and open that book. Now you see words on both sides, page on the left, the page on the right. In your mind's eye, take out all of the spaces. Now what you have is all of these words running together. And I want you to let that picture stand for a moment as intensity, action, and doing. There's no spaces between the words. Now in your mind's eye, put those spaces back in between the words. It's there in those spaces that we pause. That's where we find the richness and the renewal of being. And each of us has to take that kind of time, those pauses, to be successful at what we're going to be doing. So each of us, as I start out in the business of being, is somewhat like a small business. How we dress, what we say, our tone, the people that we are a magnet to, the people that we repel, we are like a business. And to be a business, we have to have principles that guide us. To be a human, we have principles that guide us. And it takes both doing and being to accomplish this. There's a balance there. So it being is the pause, if you will, between those words in a book.
And I think it's really important to talk then about the nature of success, right? Because I think there is this idea, especially among authors, and I'll say this was even the case for me when my first books were coming out. I had this thought of, okay, well, I'm quote unquote successful now. And what success is going to be for me is making sure that the world knows about that. Because I've been successful, now people will want to, I don't know, buy my books, for example. But having that philosophy can put a strange emphasis and strain not only on oneself, but also sometimes on the audience we hope to reach. So in your view then, why don't we talk about what success is? In your view, then, what is it to be successful?
Okay, I'd love to answer that. For me, personally, and it's going to be different for each of us, but for me, it's fulfillment. And what do I mean by that? It's satisfaction. It's gratification. So sometimes if we tie success to, let's just say, a red Ferrari, a 6,000 square foot home, something like that, we may never be successful. If we are content, if we are satisfied, if we are gratified with what we're doing, that is fulfillment. And to me, that is success. So if I lay my head down at night to go to sleep, and if I'm content and putting my head on the pillow, I am successful. Maybe nobody bought one of my books today. Maybe nobody invited me as a guest speaker. But if I'm content and it's not tied to a dollar amount or something like that, it is totally quantifiable to me. I know if I'm content. I know if I'm fulfilled. It may not be tied to, and it is not, a dollar amount or something like that. But that, for me, is success.
And that really harkens back for me to episode 72 of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast, where I had Anne Garvin on the show. And Anne said that for her, and I'm paraphrasing here, for her, the idea of success was the ability to live the writer's life. It wasn't, oh, well, I need to have a traditionally published book out every year or 2 years. It wasn't, well, I'll only be successful if I'm in a position to be an award-winning author. It was this ability to live a writer's life, whatever that means. And I know that for me, this is one of the reasons why I'm grateful for your explanation of what success is to you, because I have been trying to reframe success for myself through the lens that you've mentioned here, as well as through the lens that Anne mentioned back in episode 72, with this idea that if we're living the writer's life, and the writer's life is what we want to embody, and if we can feel content and if we can feel fulfilled, that should certainly be enough. I mean, isn't the goal ultimately to kind of just have that inner peace at some point? I would think so anyway.
Absolutely. And I actually listened to that particular episode. I happen to love Anne. She's just an amazing human being. And so are the tall poppies. And I could go on and on. But that's exactly correct. If I love that you're reframing, that you're closing the gap. And the writer's life could be different for everybody, too. Some people might say the writer's life is when I can quit a traditional job, and that might be great for them. I mean, nobody's wrong. What it is to them. But I love that you have nailed it down to having the writer's life, or Anne has said that. And again, and being able to define for yourself or myself what exactly that means.
And why don't we tease that out even further here by returning to this sort of duality that exists between this notion of being and the notion of doing. And we'll start here with being. And what I want to know is, why is it that being is so important to understanding oneself professionally, sure, but personally as well? Why don't you elaborate on that for us a little bit?
Okay. It's in the pause. Remember, we talked about the pauses. It's in the pause of being that we make time to reflect. And I want to be very clear here. We do not find time. Many people will say, well, I can't find time, or when I do make time. None of us can find time. We have to make it. We have to carve it out. That can be a big trip up for any author sitting out there, whether they're, regardless of where they are in their writing path, beginning, advanced, we have to carve out the time. And so we need to take this internal inventory, both personally and professionally, of where we are currently, where we're going, and what it takes, the best way to close that gap. So let's talk about authors specifically. Let's say you're on page 17 of a new manuscript. Your goal is to, that's where you are now, your goal is to reach the end, at the end. Well, how are you going to close the gap between page 17 and page, 312? It's by putting our bottoms in a chair and showing up every single day and writing. And strangely, you and I both talk at writers' conferences on a regular basis. Strangely, one of the biggest problems is writers who either A, don't put their bottoms in a chair to write, or B, when they do put their bottom in a chair to write, then they say, you know what, I've got to do the dishes. Oh, I forgot to iron that shirt. Oh, by golly, we're out of milk and bread. And it's a funny thing that writers are supposed to be writing, but they're not carving out the time for it, or they're letting themselves be distracted. So it's in that being that we do this internal inventory, and we get the job done. We show up for the purpose that we have stuck our stake in the ground for, and we, by golly, do it.
And it sounds then that there is, of course, some interplay between being and doing. Because in my understanding of what you've said here, being is this idea of doing the evaluation that lets us ask ourselves, okay, what is it that I want? What have I done to get where it is that I want to be or where I am? What is it maybe that I want to do next? And how am I feeling about all of it? But then, of course, we have to make a decision about how we are going to go after the thing that it is we have decided that we want. And so is that kind of where being contrasts with doing? And if it is, or even if it's not, why is it an important distinction to make?
It is, they're braided together. Think in terms of, I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to braid something. It takes those three, but we're talking about two things, but in a braid, you're talking about three separate things. They're similar. They're coming from the same skein of yarn or, you know, ball of rope or whatever it might be, but you've got to twine them back and forth and back and forth, but they're different. The braid is three different chunks, and here being and doing are two totally separate things. But if we only be, or if we only do, we're in trouble. If only being is contemplating navel fuzz, saying ohm on a mountaintop somewhere, and only doing, we're going to be burned out before you know it. It's both. It's this wonderful side by side alignment of both, but they're distinctly different, related. And it requires both.
And I think I'll pull in an example here from my own experience as of late as well, just to give some additional context for listeners who might be encountering this for the first time. I would right now consider myself, as it pertains to specific work on a manuscript, to be more in a state of being. I finished another round of revisions for a manuscript I've been toying with on and off for a couple of years now, and for the time being, I'm just kind of letting it sit. I know that there is going to be a particular date on which I return to it. And in the meantime, I'm letting it kind of simmer. I'm doing some thinking on it, what it is that I want it to say thematically, who I want to bring more to the fore on the page. And what about me, you know, as the author? What do I want to have for myself in the actual book itself? And I know that at some point when that day lapses, I will get back to doing, because at some point I must also do. And when I get into the stage of doing, I am feeling as though I will be much more refreshed because I gave myself this pause. You know, it's the space in between the sentences, in between the letters and the paragraphs on the page, like you mentioned at the top of the episode. And that's kind of how I'm seeing it manifest in my life right now anyway.
And you said a perfect word. You said right now you're simmering, and that is fueling. If you think of being as, you know, if you're driving your car and you never look down at the gas gauge and you just drive and drive and drive, eventually you're going to run out of fuel and find yourself stranded on the side of the road. But think of being as a refueling, as pulling into that gas station and refueling. And that's where you are right now. Even if you're not giving active thought to it, it is simmering somewhere on the back burner, just taking a walk, riding your bike, doing whatever it is that you do that's not actively doing, not working on something. It's still a platter that you're spinning somewhere. It's simmering. And that is exactly being.
This episode is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, who is actually a sponsor of the Writers Institute this year, which is a place you can come find this episode's guest, Lori Buchanan, in late March. Aside from having the opportunity to meet someone like Lori Buchanan there, you'll also have the chance to meet with the owner of Dandelion Web Marketing, Celeste Anton. Celeste is offering the opportunity for listeners to this podcast to set up one-to-one consultations with her, to which you can bring your questions about getting your author platform started or what it is you should be doing with your author website. No matter your marketing-related question, Celeste will get you pointed in the right direction. How do I know this? Well, because Dandelion Web Marketing has been helping writers and authors thrive online for years. So visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers to browse their services specifically designed to help you with your writer's platform, and make sure you come to this year's Writers Institute where you'll have the opportunity to meet with Celeste and Dandelion Web Marketing. Again, the site to visit in the meantime is dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. And I'm really glad that you've introduced this metaphor to the conversation, this notion of doing and doing relentlessly without looking at, say, our gas gauge. Well, we might run out of gas. And this, again, is ringing very true to me because I have only learned to embrace the being side of myself. I've only relearned to embrace the being side of myself after having done just that. It was very, well, I have cruise control set. I'm enjoying the scenery. Everything's going mostly okay. I'm just going to keep my head down, my visor down, my shades on, drive into the sun. Next thing I knew, I was out of gas. And it was a long, difficult walk to the next gas station where I could call in the support and get a tow truck and whatever the case might be. So I'm really glad that you've introduced that metaphor because it is such a difficult thing to find oneself suddenly out of gas and needing to, you know, call in that help. But it's important that that help be there. And it's important we remind ourselves that if we just be, if we take the time to refuel, we can get ourselves back on the road again in no time.
And that's exactly correct. And that gas that we're putting in when we're refueling, you have to remember as authors, that is equivalent to inspiration and creativity. Now, a lot of people use those two words interchangeably. And I'd like right here and right now to differentiate the two. Inspiration is something like I can't see you, but hold up your left hand, like up to the ceiling, and think in terms of inspiration is something you're receiving. Now put your arm down. Creation is your other hand. Put it near your keyboard without cutting us off, and that's what comes out. So there's the input, that is inspiration, and the creativity is the output. It's a result of that inspiration, but both are come about by refueling. That's what the fuel is that we get by being. And when we just do, we run out of gas and we no longer have inspiration, the input, or creativity, the output.
And it seems like now we've done a really great job there of making sure that we have a distinction between being and doing while also understanding and respecting that there is a relationship between the two of these as well. And that has me wanting to know next more about the business, quote unquote, and the author side of all of this. Because in the business of being, you write about how important it is to, even as an author, have core values as well as a mission and vision statement. But before we explore what those are, I kind of want to know why. I mean, it might seem a little strange for writers to be sitting down and crafting a mission statement and a vision statement and having core values, but why should we be considering that for ourselves as writers?
That's a great question, Ryan. And so the first thing I want to say is not every writer is going to establish core values or mission and vision statements. There are some writers who just want to write for themselves. They're not interested in cultivating a readership. And it's for those writers, and that's fantastic. There's no right or wrong. They don't need to have anything to do with values and mission and vision statements. But for the writers who want to promote, market, sell, and profit from their writing, they are in business. They're an authorpreneur. And that the definition of authorpreneur is an author who treats writing as a business. So I'm mostly talking to those writers today. And being in business, no matter if you're selling widgets or writing books, establishing core values and mission and vision statement is, to my way of thinking, critical. don't think of it like this. No self-respecting adventurer or world traveler would leave home without a compass and a map. Core values, mission, and vision statements are the compass and map equivalents to an author who mean business, an authorpreneur.
And I'm really glad that that was in your book, of course, and that you've also mentioned that we want to have these instruments that we can always come back and refer to. Because after having read The Business of Being, I've been putting more thought into what it is I want to have for, say, my vision statement, for a mission statement, for my core values, not even necessarily just as an author, because I feel that that has been the biggest challenge for me, but more specifically as it pertains to these podcasts and also a spinoff project that I will have moving forward here. And what I have found is that in occasionally thinking about, okay, who do I want to have on as a guest next on this show? Who am I going to reach out to? Who am I going to extend an offer to spend some time here on the airwaves? I can now always come back to, well, will inviting this particular guest or will accepting a particular pitch for an episode, is that going to help me further the mission of the RightsCast Network? And having that there as a sort of signpost has been really elucidating. And it's helped me ensure that for what we have so far in the first quarter of 2020 and for what I'm looking for beyond that, both with my podcast and the side project, it should all be aligned. And it'll help me feel more comfortable as well as help others, I would assume, know what it is that they're getting into every time they listen to one of these episodes.
Yes, yes. And I think, I don't know if you're referring to with your side thing, but I've been watching on Instagram and I saw you with the green screen behind you. And I think you're alluding to that. I hope you are.
Yes, I sure am. I think by the time this episode debuts, I will have made a public announcement. I'll make one here now. And if I haven't made a public announcement yet, I guess this will constitute that. But I am actually going to be spinning the RightsCast Network off into RightsCast Academy. So there will now be, of course, these free, almost weekly tidbits of interviews and craft conversations and the things like you and I are doing right now, Lori. But I will also be launching a, let's see, if I have my mission statement and my vision statement pulled up for RightsCast Academy. RightsCast Academy will be this. It invites creatives worldwide to learn, engage, and grow as writers through our dynamic digital coursework, which is presented in the form of video modules and complemented by the sense of community fostered by its students. So, exciting things on the horizon, and it all comes back to that.
My hat is off to you. That is so exciting. You can't see me, but I'm giving you a standing ovation.
Well, I appreciate that, Lori, and I will, I'm sure, have much to say about this endeavor as we advance into the Writers Institute in late March here, and I'm sure we'll have a chance to catch up about it then. I do have some big plans for a rollout in time for that, but a lot of work to be done in the meantime, and a lot more to be said here, actually, about mission statements, core values, what have you. So why don't we take core values first? I mean, I just shared what to me was a mission statement, but let's go with core values so we can tease this out. What is it that we mean when we talk about establishing core values?
Okay. Core values reflect what an organization, a company, or in this case of today's conversation, author, their values. They're a reflection of philosophy, principles, and beliefs. They're an internal compass of the company or the author. Bottom line on top, the company or author's guarantee. So let me say Stephen King, his guarantee, we all know, I hear your listeners saying scary. He guarantees and he delivers scary. Now think Janet Ivanovich in the Stephanie Plum novel. She guarantees and she delivers laughter. So when we stand in alignment with our core value, with our guarantee, we thrive. These two people are thriving because of their guarantee. They never fail to deliver, ever. So I've read one of your books, Accounting for It All. I read it quite recently, as a matter of fact. And what I got, the guarantee that I got, now I haven't read any of your other books. So from what I gleaned from this is cutting edge, almost bleeding edge, and down, it was wit, this cutting edge wit, and it was this down home charm. And so I know the next time I pick up one of your books, I can expect that. Now you may write different genres, and this may be a one off. I don't know, but I got this. That just blew me away, and the fact that you wrote in first person in a female voice, you just blew me away. So I now have this very high bar. And the next time I pick up one of your books, I know that I can expect this cutting edge wit, down home charm, high bar.
And I really appreciate everything you have said there. And also beyond just the compliments that you've mentioned, there's also, beneath all of that, one of the great challenges that I found myself facing as an author. Because as you mentioned, that is a one-off book. It exists kind of unto itself and actually is rather different from all of my other published material. That being specifically right now, my Empathy sci-fi series. And so if you are a reader who, for example, picked up Accounting for It All and then said, oh, wow, I really happen to enjoy this. I'd like to read more by this author. Well, when you shift over to the Empathy series, you're getting something very different. It is this very dark techno thriller kind of feel. And that could be a challenge for readers who are looking to really dive in on what an author has to offer, which is, again, why I have found it a bit easier to craft to understand what my core values are for these podcasts and for RightsCast Academy, as well as to develop a mission statement for both of them. The author stuff has remained tricky because I really enjoy writing that sort with that sort of wit, you could call it, or with something that's just a little bit more lighthearted or at times farcical, but still perhaps evocative when appropriate. I also have this side of me that's writing this really dark sci-fi stuff. And so I have to kind of reconcile what it is that I want to do going forward as an author. And that's just part of the process of, again, I'm shifting away from the doing. I'm going to go back to the being and slowly figure out what it is that I want for myself as an author. And it continues on and on from there with this interplay that we've discussed in great detail.
Oh, and you segued into this next little piece perfectly. So for me, I have two award-winning nonfiction, prescriptive nonfiction books out there. And my guarantee for those is that they are positive, uplifting, constructive, and healing, and they help the reader close the gap between where they are and where they want to be. Now I have shifted gears. I've sold a 3-book series, and this is a thriller series. It's a psychological thriller. And so my core value, my guarantee on this is completely different. It is, I'm delivering a ticking time bomb of simmering tension that keep the space between the pages and the reader emotionally taut. Two opposite ends of the spectrum. And so the shifting gears has been a blast. I mean, it's a complete and total blast, but it is some fancy footwork there.
It is. And then you have to consider things as well, like what is your web presence going to be like for perhaps one version of yourself or another, or are you going to migrate completely? And that gets really into the hardcore, I suppose, hashtag business side of it. But if we're going to be talking about it from our personal relationship to all of this, and if we want to continue to have these signposts for ourselves, both with your transition and my transition here as well, or my, I don't know if I'd call it a transition per se, but just my sort of sorting out what it is I want to do in the world of fiction. I kind of want to know specifically then, what about mission statements? You know, we talked about core values as guarantees, but what is it that we mean by mission statements in the context of being an author?
That's a great question. So let me start out by giving you Stephen Covey's definition, because he said it really well. He said a mission statement is your constitution, the solid expression of your vision and values. It becomes the criterion by which you measure everything else in your life. And that is wonderful. Now, let me give you my, in a nutshell, definition of mission statement. And I believe that is what declares an author. It builds confidence and represents their daily best. This is a daily best. So for as an example, my personal mission statement as an author is I carve out protected time to write every day. And so if you were to see me right now, which you can't, I'm in my little writing studio, and the door is closed, and next to the door is a sign that says there better be blood, flood, or fire. That means, you know, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Everybody knows, do not interrupt Lori when the, you know, that door is closed. And it is I didn't make the statement as I hope to or I'm going to carve out protected time every day. I stated it as a foregone conclusion. I stated it as a fact. So again, my mission statement, it's for my daily best. I carve out protected time to write every day, except for, of course, when I'm on vacation. So that is what a mission statement is, your daily best.
And I really like that we're starting to see this sort of, again, another layer of interplay. Earlier, we had this idea of being and doing. Now we've got these core values. That's the guarantee that kind of exists between who we are as creatives and the individuals that are on the receiving end of that creativity. And then we have for ourselves this mission, or I suppose if we think about it in sort of a militaristic sense, what is your mission, you know, comma, soldier? Well, my mission today is to sit down, carve out that protected time to write. And it's like you say, come hell or high water, that's what my mission is going to be for the time I have set aside for it. So that's a really good evolution that I think we're starting to see. And it's building some connectivity between all of these sort of seemingly possibly nebulous ideas to those who haven't encountered them before.
Yes.
And then we have, of course, a third dimension to all of this, and that is our not mission statement, but our vision statement. So how does that contrast with our mission statement?
Okay, well, our mission statement is our daily best. Our vision statement creates momentum and represents a company, an organization, or in the context of this conversation, an author's future best. So let me give you an example. My personal vision statement as an author, and it's very simple. Fiction or nonfiction, fans of my work love the human experience I bring to life on the page. Again, I don't say I hope to, I'm going to really try hard. I make it a statement of fact, a foregone conclusion. Fiction or nonfiction, fans of my work love the human experience I bring to life on the page.
This episode of the R.R. Campbell WritesCast is brought to you by the Wisconsin Writers Association's Jade Ring Contest. The Jade Ring Contest is open to writers of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction who are interested in having their work published in Wisconsin People and Ideas magazine and Creative Wisconsin Literary Journal. Along with the opportunity to have their work published in these journals and magazines, the contest winners can also earn the coveted Jade Ring cash prizes and bolster their author platform. The Jade Ring Contest is now in its 72nd year, and it has a long, rich history of some wonderful work being chosen. So go ahead and visit wiwrite.org/contests to learn more about this opportunity to submit your work to the Jade Ring Contest. And that I see having some really direct connectivity to one's core values then, of course, as well, because if core values are going to be defined by this notion of a guarantee, of an experiential guarantee on the part of those who engage with our creative work, then that vision statement is perhaps sort of they're the steps that we as the author are going to take to ensure that we follow up on that guarantee, and we do all of that by executing our daily mission statement. Does that seem kind of like the way that we would frame that?
You nailed it.
Good. I'm glad, because I know that this was something that when I first picked up the business of being, I'm one of those people who I'm generally a pretty skeptical guy when I sit down to read a book, especially nonfiction, especially prescriptive nonfiction, like you say. And so I was using my critical reading lens as I read, but I found myself convinced, of course, Lori, because you write in such a powerful and convincing way, and it all really translated well for me. And so I'm glad, knowing that I have finished reading the book, we've been able to talk about it, and here it is. I wasn't mistaken. You were, in fact, right all along. I don't know if your husband would be very happy about that, nor would my wife, of
Probably
course,
not.
But but I'm glad we could converge on the same understanding of all of this, of course, with your help here, because you laid it out in such a clear way. So just to recap again, core values, right? That is about our guarantee. Our mission statement is about what we're doing daily, and our vision statement sort of unites the two by talking about how we are going to get to this future vision through the execution of our daily work to arrive at those core values. So, with all of that in mind, though, we also need to know about goals and objectives, I think, because that's another topic that you mentioned in The Business of Being. And anyone who has listened to any of these shows before with any regularity knows personally how strongly I feel both about goals in real life and in storytelling, but I actually haven't spoken much at all about objectives because this was kind of a new thing to me. So in your view then, what's the difference between goals and objectives, and why is it that they're important?
Okay, so let's think of goals as the destination. Goals define where you're going and when you're going to arrive. They increase effectiveness, and they're usually comprised of words as opposed to numbers. They're usually not something you measure. They're usually something you talk about. Now, objectives are the map. They're specific steps you take to reach the destination. They support goals, they enhance efficiency, and they often involve numbers and dates. They are tangible, they are measurable. So goals and objectives, when braided together again, they're very similar, they're kissing cousins, when braided together, keep us on task. They hold us accountable to ourselves, our readership, and if you have a publisher, to our contract as well. So my publisher is She Writes Press and Spark Press. I'm writing book two now. I'm halfway through book two of that three-book series, and on my wall to my left are two legal-size printouts that are glued or taped together landscape. So legal size, that's pretty wide. What is that? 14 and 14 is 28 inches wide. And it is our agreement: on this date, I will have this in hand. On this date, you will have this in hand. On this date, I will have this in hand. It's tangible and it's measurable. And if I didn't have these things to shoot for, if I'm shooting a gun and don't have a target, I'm going to be in trouble, or somebody else is going to be in trouble. But with these targets, I know what I have to hit and when I have to hit them.
And that's actually a really interesting way. And now that I'm hearing you say that out loud, it's clicking for me in a way that it hadn't before, because you mentioned specifically this notion that goals do not need to necessarily involve numbers. They don't need to be quantitative, but our objectives, the things that we are going to use along the way to achieving our goals, are generally going to involve numbers and dates and things like you say. And I want to make sure that it is clear to listeners to this particular episode that if they've heard me talk about goals in the past on other episodes, I personally have always framed goals as being sort of the quantitative aspect of things. I consider it to be a quality goal if that goal can be quantified. And I've always looked at what you call goals as aspirations. So for example, you might have an author, someone who is unagented but wants to get an agent. They might, in my framework, have the aspiration of getting an agent. But to get that agent, they're going to have to set a lot of quantitative goals that are within their control to try to reach that aspiration. Whereas in your framework, it sounds like the goal for them might be to get the agent, and they're going to have objectives along the way, like I need to carve out this time every day to write, and then I also need to carve out time every day to query agents, for example. Does that seem like a fair comparison, even if we're using different terminology here?
Absolutely, it does. And to further that home, I, in my planner in the back at the beginning of each year, I do what I do mind mapping. And for some readers who may not be familiar with that term, it's nothing more than a diagram that visually organizes information. So I put myself in the center, and then I have these little lines going out, and one is health, one is writing, one is travel, and one is, you know, family and friends, that type of thing. And then from there you have more lines, and from there you have more lines, and from there you have more lines. Well, my planner, I book all of my 2020 speaking engagements, or 90% of them, in 2019. I book a year in advance, so I know what's coming down the pipe, and I assign each of these things a color. And then I go into my planner and I color code, so I can look immediately and say, okay, that's blue, I'm writing between this time, that's red, you know, that's an appointment, that's whatever, an appointment that can't be missed. So our conversation today was highlighted in red. That is something that cannot slip off the radar. So this mind mapping creates chewable bite-sized pieces. Nothing I'm going to choke on. I don't bite off more than I can chew. It's something I can sink my teeth into and actually enjoy. I'm not choking it down. And so by the time the year is over, I've accomplished these things. I can check them off. I don't call it a to-do list. I call it a ta-da list, because that makes my endorphins feel much better. I feel much more accomplished when I have a ta-da list. So this being able to mind map and assign these little tiny bite-sized chewable pieces is for somebody with my mindset is just so comforting and doable, achievable.
And it also seems like creating a mind map is both an exercise in being and doing, because you're taking the time to look at this map and say, okay, if I'm going to ensure that I'm in a position to be doing the amount of being that I need to be doing over the course of the next year, this is what I need to kind of have as my focus points. But you're also taking concrete steps to ensure you have this time set aside to be doing your being. And therefore we have, again, I've used the word once, I'll use it a bajillion times, this interplay between the being and doing playing out again. So it just goes to show how related all of this continues to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And on that point, why don't we just bring this back now to being? And I'm curious to know what final advice you might have for writers who are kind of struggling to establish themselves or just find value in simply being.
I think the best tip I can give is balance. Now, you happen to be talking with a Libra, so I'm all about those scales. Balance is everything, but not just to Libras. If balance is everything, so that doing and being, fuel up and then drive the car, then fuel up and drive the car, but don't be driving on fumes. Don't get down to less than a quarter of a tank. You've got to fill up just like you would your regular car. Hopefully nobody out there is running out of gas in real life on a regular basis. When most of us look down and we go, oh my gosh, you know, I've got a quarter of a tank, I'm going to pull in and fill up. Same with writing or relationships or anything, fill in the blank. We have these people, places, things, events, and opportunities. These are the five things that we encounter in our lives. And we need to fuel up for each one of those. We can't just do. We've got to go and fuel up, go and fuel up. So balance.
And as a fellow Libra over here on the other side of the conversation, I certainly appreciate the desire for balance. So I'm really glad that you introduced that into our conversation here. And I think you have maybe one other additional image you wanted to leave us with as it pertained to having both words and spaces on the page.
Yes, it takes both. You know, it is so valuable. Just if you readers, if you listeners would close your eyes and in your mind's eye, open a book and again, remove the spaces. And it's just this big conglomeration of nothing but words. And that this big pow, that's that being or doing. Now in your mind's eye, insert those spaces back in. And that's that pause that refreshes. That's what makes the book enjoyable is the pauses. Think in terms of music. If we think in terms of a youngster sitting down at the piano bench for the very first time and you open up the keyboard and their hands, palms come crashing down on the keys, all at once, nothing individual, no spaces. It's not a pleasant sound. But once we learn to put the pauses and the spaces between individual keys, we have this delightful music to listen to. Same, being and doing. It requires both. It requires the pause in between to enjoy the pressing of the keys or the reading of the book.
Well, a very good lesson to leave us with, but before I let you go, where is it that listeners can find you online?
That would be lauriebuchanan.com. And my version of Laurie is Laurie, Buchanan.com. And from there, you'll be able to find my blog that is a syndicated blog with the Good Men Project. I have almost a million views right now. I'm very excited. That's TuesdaysWithLaurie.com. But you can find it. If all you can remember is Laurie Buchanan, just add a .com at the end, and you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and all that good stuff. My author website will take you there.
Well, there you have it. Laurie Buchanan can be found just about everywhere you need to find her online. And the book, again, listeners, is The Business of Being. So thank you again, Laurie, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell Rightscast here on the Rightscast Network.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. Thank you.
There you have it. My interview of Laurie Buchanan, author of The Business of Being. Thanks to Laurie for joining me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could leave the Rightscast Network a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the Rightscast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who have already left us a rating and review, thank you. I of course owe additional thanks to the RightsCast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/rightscast. In exchange for their support, RightsCast Network patrons get access to some great patron perks, including RightsCast swag, discounts on my editing services, and entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques performed by yours truly. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen today in supporting our programming directly at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Any level of contribution will get you access to some of those fantastic patron perks, so become a supporter today by making your pledge at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors, Dandelion Web Marketing, the Wisconsin Writers Association, and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit rightscast.net/sponsors. Coming up next on the RightsCast Network is an episode of Novel Approaches. To learn more about what my Novel Approaches guest co-host and I will cover in this episode, you can visit rightscast.net before the episode debuts on Apple Podcasts, rightscast.net, and wherever you listen to podcasts on March 13th. Until then, you can stay in touch with us by visiting rightscast.net or by saying hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at RightsCast, or by searching for the RightsCast Network. We're also available by email at rightscast@gmail.com, and you can now call us at area code 608-284-8342, where you can leave a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in future programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can visit rrcampbellwrites.com or holler at me on Twitter as @IamRRCampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, the Wisconsin Writers Association, and the University of Wisconsin Writers Institute. And always streaming at rightscast.net.